stormy winds wail. This one. Good evening, truth seekers. Welcome to this edition of the Malloy program. Hey, at 9:30, well, I'm sorry, if you're not in the Eastern time zone, that doesn't make any sense. But at the bottom of the first half hour here, I have somebody that I'm going to chat with for a while, and I want you to hear the conversation. His name is Peter Quinn. He's with the T.J. Martell Foundation. It is an organization that works against some pretty nasty diseases that targets very decent people. And we're going to do that. Be in about 10 minutes. And I want you to listen. It's cancer and AIDS research. And I want you to hear what Peter Quinn has to say. Okay? Will you do that for me? Okay. This morning, I turned on CNN, big mistake. Always is. I'm sorry. I used to work there, but boy, things changed. By the way, this hour is sponsored by Christopher, and I don't know if he wants me to use his last name. I don't know anymore. Christopher Lang. No message. Just sponsors. Thanks, Christopher. I appreciate it. Turned on CNN this morning. And to see what kind of coverage I might see from what happened last night in Madison, Wisconsin. And the CNN morning anchorwoman, Kira Chetri, I don't care for anyway. I think she is a typical talking head for early in the morning. The people that make the decisions about who's going to be on network television in the morning, especially CNN and some of these other channels, base their decision not on somebody's journalistic experience, but on somebody's appearance and Q factor. Q factor being, I think, how people react to their prettiness. So you usually see a very attractive woman, very young, and a very attractive man, much older. And this, apparently, the attractive woman, very young, appeals to the male viewers, and the attractive male, middle-aged or older, appeals to the women. So it has nothing whatsoever to do with journalism and everything in the world to do with marketing. So even knowing that, there's something about Kira Chetri that to me is like fingernails going down a chalkboard. I cannot handle her in the morning. I can't handle her in the afternoon or evening or at any time. Having said that, this morning, she had a brief interview with Joe Erkenbaugh, who's a senator from, he's a Democrat, senator, state senator, in Madison. And in the course of the interview, Kira Chetri was, as far as I'm concerned, hostile against the position taken by the Democrats in Madison. Ms. Chetri only sees it as some kind of disturbance out there. I don't know what it is, but and okay, we'll give you some video, but Jesus Christ, what's wrong with these people? I mean, for sure, what are they protesting about? Oh my God, can somebody bring me makeup? I'm getting all upset about this, please. So she has a state senator on, Erkenbaugh. And after asking him inane, half-assed questions, and getting erudite, pointed answers to her inane, half-assed questions. She, Kira Chetri, totally misstates and propagandizes for the Walker administration and says that Walker campaigned for governor on ending collective bargaining rights. Senator Erkenbaugh immediately interrupts pretty Miss Chetri and corrects her, which she did not want to hear. Anchors, especially cute young female anchors early in the morning, do not like to be corrected by somebody who has the facts. That's irritating to the cute young anchor. Now, it made me pause and fumble around on the nightstand for the channel selector to turn the goddamn thing off. But it occurred to me, as I'm punching the button, is there nobody at CNN, no supervising producer, no senior editor, who would look at the copy that Kira Chetri was going to read her spontaneous questions from? And they are never spontaneous. They don't allow the pretty talking girls and the pretty talking old men in the morning to come up with spontaneous questions. Don't ever think that any question asked by one of these people is spontaneous and from their own heads. They are not. But couldn't anyone on the morning show at CNN, what is it, American Morning? Woohoo! Could no one have checked and found out that this punk-ass governor in Wisconsin did not campaign on the idea of ending collective bargaining rights? But Ms. Chetri had a very hard time being corrected by a state senator. A very hard time indeed, and tried to overtalk him. But Joe Erkenbaugh? Damn it, I'm sorry. I can't read my handwriting. I'm scratching this down in the morning. I'm still half asleep. Erkenbaugh, I think, is his name. Joe didn't let her. I mean, he out-talked her. And bless his heart for doing it. Erkenbaugh? Wait a minute. Hold on just a second here. Alice sent this in. Erkenbaugh. Okay. Joe Erkenbaugh. I'm sure it's Joe, not John, isn't it? Oh, well. The senator, the Democratic senator, who had the misfortune of being on camera with cute Miss Chetri. If you're female or a feminist or whatever, please don't email me now and tell me that I'm being anti-woman or I am being anti-feminist. I am not. Kira Chetri is as much of a feminist as I am a Nazi goose stepper. You know, she is a highly, didn't she, I think she came from Fox News anyway. I do not like thee, Dr. Fell. The reasons why I cannot tell, but this I know, and I know full well. I do not like thee, Kira Chetri. Get off my television at 7 o'clock in the morning. Or try, just try to get your facts straight. Oh my God, Kathy. We're on the air here for 8 minutes, and I'm screaming again. Just wanted to get that said. As far in the third hour, we're going to talk a little bit about this attack on Muslims in this country. The most recent of which is this horrendous pigsty of a hearing that Peter King held today. And that's the other thing. I went to C-SPAN and C-SPAN 2 to try to find the hearings. During the hearings, the C-SPAN channel that said U.S. Senate, I don't know what the hell they were talking about. People standing up and rattling on, droning, I have no idea. I went to C-SPAN 2 that said U.S. House of Representatives. Isn't that where this hearing was conducted? Isn't it the Homeland Security Committee? Isn't that one of the most important committees? I mean, it's Homeland Security! And you know what the House of Representatives channel, C-SPAN 2, was telecasting at the time? The opening session of the Irish Parliament 3 days ago. Let's take a break. We'll come back in a couple of quick minutes. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour? This hour is sponsored by Christopher Lang. Thank you, Christopher. Coming up after the next break, we're going to speak a few minutes with Peter Quinn. He is the CEO of the T.J. Martell Foundation. It's an organization dedicated to cancer and AIDS research. And we're gonna. You probably have heard the PSA. Is that what you call it? Public service announcement that I do now about this organization, T.J. Martell Foundation. So I want you to hear what this man has to say. It'll be short and interesting. Rachel Maddow touched on this last night, and I'm going to get to a little bit later in the program about what is going on in Michigan. You think it was bad in Wisconsin? My God. This new Republican governor, Rick Snyder, in Michigan is pushing a bill through the Michigan legislature that will give ultimate government power, literally. This is no crap, literally, to corporations. And thereby using what Naomi Klein has described as shock doctrine tactics to create some form of dystopian government that is, this is it, folks. I mean, it has begun. And I'll tell you, this is the last push by corporate America, by the capitalist system that is rotten to the core. This is it. If we don't resist now, like the people in Wisconsin are doing, like 10,000 people in Columbus, Ohio did, like hopefully the people in Lansing, Michigan are going to do. That's the capital, right, Lansing? This is it. We have allowed the corporate capitalist bastards to roll over us over and over again. When this latest episode started on December 12th, 2000, and we all sat back on our asses and did nothing, while the United States Supreme Court's five neo-fascist members turned this country over to corporate America in the person of George W. Bush, that was it. That was the signal to corporate America that they could do any goddamn thing they wanted to do. And we would not react, not to the point of making it stop. That's where we are, truth seekers. And I'm telling you, we are at the absolute last chance to use peaceful resistance and civil disobedience to stop the machine. I'm telling you. March 19th, in Washington, D.C., March 20th at Quantico, you'll have a chance to express your outrage about these illegal wars and occupations that are also part of corporate America's absolute master plan to drain the treasury of this country, not to zero, to minus trillions. A hole so deep that you and I will never get out of it. I will be in D.C. on the 19th. I will be at Quantico on the 20th. I hope that if you can, you'll do the same. I hope you will. I hope you will. But seriously, we're kind of running out of time. This is not the 60s. This is not an attempt to stop one illegal war. This is not an attempt to restore power to the legislative branch of government that we all dealt with under Nixon and to a lesser degree under Lyndon Johnson. This is the end of what this country has told its citizens it stands for the past 200 years. This is it. This is it. And when I share with you what is happening in Michigan, and you probably already know, and as you witness what's going on in Wisconsin, as you hear what is being prepared in these other states, if you have any doubt that this is some kind of flaming liberal left-wing rhetoric that has no basis in reality, then perhaps you should get a reality check. I'm just saying. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, hopefully our guest will be on the line. His name is Peter Quinn. We're going to talk for a few minutes about the T.J. Martell Foundation, and which is an organization, I think, of hope and promise. And then we'll come back and talk about the organization of death and destruction, which is where we're living right now. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Before
the hour, if you're a regular listener to this program over the years, you know that I do not, or let me rephrase it, I very seldom endorse commercial products. I have been asked a couple of times, and occasionally I'll do it. If I find out after I started the endorsement that there's something weird about the product, I usually bail out. Nonprofit foundations are a different story altogether. Somebody said one time, after the verb to give, the verb to help is the most important critical verb in the language. And I want to tell you, that's the kind of work that T.J. Martell Foundation does. And I want to tell you just a little bit about this. This foundation helps by funding innovative leukemia, cancer, and AIDS research. Leukemia, cancer, and AIDS research. The funds that the T.J. Martell Foundation provides to this research are often matched or leveraged with National Cancer Institute funding and other private sources. This means that this foundation has earned the reputation, for which they can be proud. They certainly can. It's a unique way of funding research, and so far nearly a quarter of $1 billion has resulted in over $1 billion of additional funding going to these researchers. Let me tell you a couple of things. After 36 years of working to fund ever more vital cancer and AIDS research, the researchers now are on a venture, a significant progress that is going to change medicine. As you know, there's been a lot of research in the past several years where it concerns the genetic components, the absolute, the cellular level of these cancers. And I think in the future, you know, I certainly won't be around to see it. Maybe you will. I know my kids and grandkids will. In the future, the treatment of so many of these diseases will be tailored to the individual, and it will be the result of research like that funded by the T.J. Martell Foundation. One of the funded scientists with T.J. Martell recently developed new methods for detecting and identifying circulating tumor cells, which may be the cause of metastasis in cancers. That removes a big hurdle to early detection through blood tests. Another Martell-funded cancer researcher is on the brink of describing and identifying cancer stem cells that may be responsible for cancers returning after treatment or surgery. Another longtime Martell researcher has discovered a genetic fingerprint that predicts outcomes in certain breast cancers. It goes on and on and on. They have a website. I'd like you to go there at some point. T.J. Martell. That's M-A-R-T-E-L. L. Two L's. T.J. Martell Foundation.org. T.J. Martell. M-A-R-T-E-L-L Foundation.org. And just spend some time at this website. As you know, the government funding for an awful lot of research is being dramatically cut, slashed. So where's the funding going to come from? You know, the idea of poisoning, burning, or cutting cancer cells, cancer tumors, at some point is going to seem like the old medieval way of using leeches to cure people or bloodletting to cure people. And it's going to come. These cures are going to come through research like T.J. Martell. We have asked, and he has graciously agreed to come talk to us for a couple of minutes, Peter Quinn, who is the CEO of the T.J. Martell Foundation. He joins us from New York City. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Michael. Thank you. That was wonderful comments you made about us.
Well, I think what you folks are doing is absolutely critical. You know, we have an aging population here, the famous baby boomers. There's about 78 million of us, and that provides a target population for an awful lot of these diseases that pop up in older age. I don't want to say old age. Hell, I'm there. But older age. And I think the research that you folks fund is absolutely necessary.
Well, it's very true. And I'm certainly one of, just like you, I'm a baby boomer as well and right in the heart of it. And cancer, unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately in the sense that it strikes children much, much less than it does adults. And older adults, it strikes even more. It is a bit of a disease of opportunistic disease for elderly. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, you have a higher probability. So certainly as the aging baby boomers hit this, it's going to be a very significant issue for them.
You know, when years and years and years ago, the woman I was married to at the time worked at a medical college of Virginia in the nuclear medicine division. And one of the things, she used to come home from work and tell me one of the saddest things that she worked with are childhood neuroblastomas. And I understand that she said invariably in those cases, there was absolutely no hope for these little kids. And I understand that through T.J. Martell, this is no longer the case.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, Medical College of Virginia is an excellent place. I'm quite familiar with it. It's a superb place. And there's, you know, for many, many years, it was outstanding centers that really couldn't do much against neuroblastoma, the deadly form of cancer attacking young children, primarily their nervous system. And the mortality rate was about 80%. In other words, less than 20% of the children really survived. And this was probably 10, 12, 15 years ago. And the Martell Foundation made a significant commitment to fighting neuroblastoma, especially through the research that we funded at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, which is associated with the USC College of Medicine. And since that, about 10, 12 years now, they have literally, through the research, turned this thing on its head. So before, where 20% of the people survived and 80% failed. Now, today, it's over 80% cure rate with less than 20% of children failing. And we continue to fund this effort with the goal to reach 100% cure rate, and I think it's within our grasp.
I would hope so. Like I said, at the time, the woman I was married to used to come home many times after work pretty much in tears about what how futile the treatments really were and how the kids just absolutely didn't have a chance. I want to touch on what the reason you're on tonight. I have recorded a promotional message about the used cell phone promotion that T.J. Martell is interested in. What's that all about?
Well, as a lot of people know, they have a lot of cell phones sitting around in their drawers.
Yes.
We upgrade constantly, especially us baby boomers. We love that stuff. And we can't seem to get enough of it. Every 6 months or a year, a new device comes out, and we go out and buy it. And what do we do with our old ones? Well, we often throw them in a drawer. They sit around, and we certainly don't want to discard them, because there's a lot of toxic material in phones.
Mm-hmm.
So we store them in our drawers and our, you know, around our home. We have a program now where you can go ahead and donate your phones, send them in to us, and you will receive money. Now, what we do is the program, rather than you receiving the money would go to the Martell Foundation to support cancer research.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a two-for-one, if you will. You send in your phone, you get a charitable contribution to the foundation, and you take that toxic phone or potential toxic phone that you would perhaps wrongly throw in your garbage and get it to be recycled. So it's a great program, and we really sincerely appreciate your supporting it.
You know, it's a super idea. I don't know, I doubt if my audience knows this, but a few months ago there was a dinner here in Atlanta that I attended with my business partner Ron Hartenbaum, who is extremely active in the T.J. Martell Foundation, and you know, the mayor was there, and a lot of the heavy hitters, to use a term from a long time ago, in Atlanta were at this dinner, and they were all dedicated to the same idea, and that is to make sure that T.J. Martell Foundation is viable and continues to do this research, especially now. And that's what I mentioned earlier, with funding for just about everything seeming to dry up. It is so important that private sponsorship continues or grows exponentially, hopefully, because you guys are working on some incredibly important stuff. And
absolutely.
Is all the information, Peter, about the cell phone promotion at the website?
Yes, there's a link at our website. You can just punch onto the link, you know, click on the link,
right,
and it'll take you right to the explanation of how you can send it in to us at no cost to you. You actually print out a little label, stick it on your envelope or bag or box that you can send, and there's no charge for it. Comes directly to us, and we then convert the phone into dollars. The dollars go directly for cancer research, and it supports the kind of thing that you were just talking about, Michael, in Atlanta last fall, where we had a wonderful fundraiser, and I think we raised well in excess of $100,000, of which much of it went to Emory in Atlanta, who is doing wonderful research.
Well, like I said earlier, Peter, we're just about out of time here, but like I said, I usually do not make endorsements, but this is something that I think is extremely well thought out, well put together, and I appreciate the work that T.J. Martell is doing and that you're doing, and I will continue to promote this, okay?
Thank you so much, Michael, and we appreciate your listeners, any help that they can do in sending in their cell phones.
Thanks, Peter. Take care.
Thank you.
get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Christopher Lang. Thank you, Christopher. We appreciate it very much. I've kind of reserved the third hour tonight to discuss Peter King's idiotic display of insanity this morning in Congress. Unbelievable crap. And what I'm going to be talking about third hour is how Peter King even became aware of this garbage. I'll give you a name. You might want to look it up. Bridget Gabriel. But in advance of that, Justin Elliott, writing at Salon a few days ago, posted this. By now, there's a good chance you've seen a video rocketing around the web of anti-Muslim protesters screaming at families entering an Islamic charity event in Orange County last month. One of the most striking parts of the scene is protesters continuing to shout, "Go home," and "Muhammad was a pervert," even as young children walk by with their parents. On Thursday night, Justin writes, I talked to one of those parents, Orange County resident Nusrat Qureshi, who had to walk through the gauntlet of protesters with her three children. Qureshi, who is originally from India, but has lived in the U.S. for many years, has a 10-year-old daughter, a 5-year-old son, and a 2.5-year-old son. The parking area for the event, which was sponsored by the Islamic Circle of North America, was a bit of a walk from the entrance to the community center, and a valet service hired by the organization backed out when its employees saw the angry protesters. Qureshi, who has been involved with the Islamic Circle of North America programs for Haiti relief and foster care, described what it was like to walk by the protesters. Quote, my daughter was so frightened that she just didn't say anything. Now remember, this is a 10-year-old. She was really terrified because she did realize that these people were against us. As soon as we got out of the car, people started taking pictures and started shouting. There was so much noise. My 2.5-year-old boy, who was sleeping, got up and started crying. End quote. Protesters were shouting, go back home, says Qureshi. I just thought, if you belong to America, then we belong to America as much as you do. She describes her daughter as traumatized. When I got inside, Qureshi had to sit her down and talk to her. Quote, I just said, it's okay, and these people are not going to hurt you. They put down the blinds inside so the children would not have to see the protesters. I mean, I'll tell you, I've changed my mind. I do believe that there probably does exist something intrinsically evil. And whatever it is, it is residing inside the hearts and minds and souls, if they have hearts and souls, of these filthy right-wingers. I don't care if they're teabaggers, Republicans, conservatives, the screaming mass of squirming humanity that seems to show up at funerals, screaming against gay people, shows up at an Islamic event, screaming against somebody else's religion, shows up at any kind of event they can get their filthy hands around, where workers are trying to keep their organization together, keep their union functioning. Who are these demons? Who are they? But this evil is palpable. You can not only touch it, you can smell it. It has a particular stink. If you've ever been around these right-wingers, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know what it is. A combination of sweat, tobacco, and gunpowder? I don't know. They have a stink. They have an aura. If you look at them hard enough, if you can do it, and look at the colors kind of emanating and fluctuating around their bodies. I mean, there is something going on here with these demons. Peter King, today, when he sat in his exalted chairman's position of the Homeland Security Committee, sitting there like some large beady-eyed frog a guy who used to be associated with a terrorist organization in Northern Ireland. You may have agreed with the idea of getting the British the hell out of Northern Ireland. It doesn't make any difference. One person's terrorist, remember, is another person's freedom fighter. It depends on who's doing the defining, doesn't it? It's just staggering sometimes to see the evil unleashed in this country. And it all seems to emanate from the same source, from conservatives, from right-wingers, from these hate-filled monsters, from Republicans, teabaggers, right-wingers of all stripes, all of them egged on by the filth that populates the Murdoch propaganda organization, the filth that infests state legislatures and the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, the filth that controls all of it from positions inside corporate America. I just wonder, like I've been wondering for years, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? At what point do we, and there are millions of us, tens of millions of us in this country, normal people, decide that we've had enough of this insanity and bring it to a stop one way or another? When's that going to occur? Stick around. Christopher Lang, thanks for sponsoring the hour. We'll see you right after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Residents of Arizona.
The Malloy program. Let me, I came across this today. I'm thinking about the civil disobedience that is going to occur. It should occur in various places around the country all the time, but sadly it doesn't. Thoreau, writing in the mid-19th century on the duty of civil disobedience, wrote, "If the machine of government is of such a nature that it requires you to be the agent of injustice to another, then I say, break the law." Albert Camus, "Integrity has no need of rules." John J. Miller, in the book And Hope to Die, Quote, laws are only words written on paper, words that change on society's whim and are interpreted differently daily by politicians, lawyers, judges, and policemen. Anyone who believes that all laws should always be obeyed would have made a fine slave catcher. Anyone who believes that all laws are applied equally, despite race, religion, or economic status, is a fool. Veterans fast for life. When leaders act contrary to conscience, we must act contrary to leaders. Ooh, I like that one. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, every actual state is corrupt. Good men and women must not obey laws too well. In a letter from Birmingham Jail, Martin Luther King Jr. wrote, quote, we should never forget that everything Adolf Hitler did in Germany was legal, and everything the Hungarian freedom fighters did in Hungary was illegal. A lot of this stuff, quotations about civil disobedience. If you're interested at all in attempting to save and then reframe this republic, you might read some of this stuff. Marx, Martin Luther King Jr., Einstein. You know the Thoreau, you know the gang of radicals, right? This hour is sponsored by Dave Schaefer. No message, just a sponsorship. Thanks, Dave. Last night on, actually it was on the 8th, a couple of nights ago, Sarah Jones, writing at PoliticusUSA.com, lays it out here for us, on Rachel Maddow's show, Rachel explained that Michigan Republican Governor Rick Snyder is pushing a bill through that will give ultimate government power literally to corporations. Snyder's bill not only goes after collective bargaining rights, but does in fact seem to represent the Republicans' final solution to killing democracy by enabling the replacement of elected officials, dissolving entire city governments, and handing them over to corporations. Snyder calls this his budget bill, and he says it's a shared sacrifice. But it gifts corporations with $1.8 billion in tax breaks now, right now, while hitting citizens with harder taxes, including seniors and other vulnerable individuals, and cutting essential services to an already suffering region, Michigan. Maddow said last night, quote, the Michigan House has already passed and the Michigan Senate is about to pass a bill that sounds like it is out of a dystopian leftist novel from the future. If you think Republican governors across the country are using fiscal crisis as a pretext to do stuff they otherwise want to do, this is something I don't think I would have ever believed Republicans even wanted to do. But this is what they're proposing. This hasn't gotten much national attention, but please check it out. She went on to describe the threat to democracy in Michigan. This is what she said. Governor Rick Snyder's budget in Michigan is expected to cut aid to cities and towns so much that a lot of cities and towns in Michigan are expected to be in dire financial straits. Right now, Governor Snyder is pushing a bill that would give himself, Governor Snyder, and his administration the power to declare any town or any school district to be in a financial emergency. If a town was declared by the governor or his administration to be in a financial emergency, the governor would get to put somebody in charge of that town. Are you listening, Truth Seeker? And they want to give that emergency manager, that person that they put in charge of the town, for example, the power to, quote, reject, modify, or terminate any contracts that the town may have entered into, including any collective bargaining agreements, end quote. The bill being considered in Michigan also has the power to suspend or dismiss elected officials. Think of this. Think of the Enabling Act. Think of Adolf Hitler. God damn it, Hitler is the template because he's the template. Rachel goes on, this emergency person also gets the power under the bill to suspend or dismiss elected officials. Think about that for a second. It doesn't matter who you voted for in Michigan. It doesn't matter who you elected. Your elected local government can be dismissed at will. The emergency person sent in by the Rick Snyder administration could recommend that a school district be absorbed into another school district. That emergency person is also granted power specifically to disincorporate or dissolve entire city governments. Are you listening? Maddow went on. What year was your town founded? Does it say so, like on the town borders as you drive into your town? Does it say that your town was founded in what year? What did your town's founding fathers and founding mothers have to go through to incorporate your town? Republicans in Michigan want to be able to unilaterally abolish your town and disincorporate it, regardless of what you, as a resident of that town, thinks about it. You don't even have the right to express an opinion about it through your locally elected officials who represent you, because the Republicans in Michigan say they reserve the right to dismiss your measly elected officials and to do what they want instead because they know best. Now, what's worse here is that the power to abolish governments can be handed to corporations. Are you ready for this? Rachel said the version of this bill that passed the Republican-controlled Michigan House said it was fine for this emergency power to declare a fiscal emergency invoking all of these extreme powers. It was fine for that power to be held by a corporation. So swaths of Michigan could, at the governor's disposal, be handed over to the discretion of a company. You still want your town to exist? Take it up with the board of directors of the corporation that will be overseeing your future. Or rather, don't take it up with them because they're not interested. Now, there's more of this. Are you listening to this? Are you listening? This is Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan, who has decided that the people of Michigan are scum. They're termites. And this bill is working its way through the Michigan legislature, and it will pass. And when it does pass, you people in Michigan, you can kiss it all goodbye. Past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Dave Schaefer. Thank you, Dave. Rachel Maddow then went on to talk about the power grab behind these lies that there's some kind of fiscal emergency. I think Michael Moore addressed this the other day. You know, this country is not broke. These state governments are in bad shape, but it's very easily manageable without doing what they're doing. Anyway, Maddow said the power to overrule and suspend elected government justified by a financial emergency? Oh, and how do you know you're in a financial emergency? Because the governor tells you you're in a financial emergency? Or a company he hires to do so tells you you're in a financial emergency? The Michigan Senate version of the bill says it has to be humans declaring your fiscal emergency. The House bill says that a company, a corporation, can do that just as well. Maddow went on, this is about a lot of things. This is not about a budget. This is using a fabricating crisis to push for an agenda you'd never be able to sell under normal circumstances. And so you have to convince everyone that these are not normal circumstances. These are desperate circumstances, and your desperate measures are there, and they're somehow required. What this is has a name. It's called shock doctrine. If I might add, it's also called fascism. Naomi Klein, author of The Shock Doctrine, implies that man-made crises are used to push the so-called free market principles of Milton Friedman and that whole gang of vultures who these laws are pushed through while the citizens are reacting to disasters or upheavals. A good example is what happened in the Soviet Union. The book that I just finished by Dmitry Orlov, what was the name of it, Kathy? A Collapse, it's a comparison of the collapse of the Soviet Union and the collapsing that's occurring now of the American Empire. And it's quite an eye-opener. The perpetrators of the shock doctrine require a violent destruction of the existing economic order in order to achieve their means. In the case of the Michigan governor, Rick Snyder positioned himself in a state already reeling from financial crisis, vulnerable and ripe for a takeover. This is what these son of a bitches do. Who in Michigan, who in so many of these states, had the power to resist this? Well, I've got the power to resist it. Desmond Tutu said one time, if you are neutral, excuse me, if you're neutral in systems of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. Does that register? Does that click? And as Sarah Jones goes on at PoliticusUSA.com, this is no different from when George W. Bush's administration terrified a nation after 9/11 with lies of weapons of mass destruction and terror alert levels elevating every time Bush's approval ratings sank or an election was upcoming. Remember? I realize that was a million years ago, right? But you remember what the bastards did? Except that in this case, the Republicans waged a fiscal war on America during the 8 disastrous Bush years by killing what they termed big government. But is really known as government oversight of corporations. And this killing allowed Wall Street to play fast and loose with our money while Bush went incompetently to war on terror and left the wars off the budget altogether. Do you remember any of this? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Now that they've terrorized Americans with the fiscal recession, thereby hitting us in the heart of our security centers, they are not apologizing or attempting to learn from their mistakes. Because for them, the financial devastation of the majority of Americans is not a mistake. It's a means to an end. Well, I don't know what your feelings are, but I will guarantee to you that I, in my little teeny tiny shred of reality, I am not going to be neutral in a situation of injustice. I can't. I will not. And I hope you feel the same way. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. I think we'll be back. Oh, there we are.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Dave Schaefer. Thank you, Dave. Just a few more lines here from this piece written by Sarah Jones at PoliticusUSA.com. She's writing about Rick Snyder, the new Republican fascist governor of Michigan. She says, now that they've terrorized Americans with a fiscal recession, the financial devastation of the majority of Americans is not a mistake, but a means to an end. And like any good bully or dictator, the time to strike is when you've sucker-punched your victim and he or she is lying on the ground helpless, barely clinging to life. People will give up all kinds of personal liberties when they're desperate. So now they are striking at us by deploying Republican governors as missiles of economic warfare around the country, taking away collective bargaining, taking away Medicaid, pushing our state militias ruled by the Republican governor. Pushing four state militias ruled by the Republican governor, and now in Michigan, literally giving the government to corporations. All of this will result in a Republican dystopia, a negative utopia often characterized by an authoritarian or totalitarian form of government, which entails a repressive and controlled state. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder is calling this power grab, quote, a $45 billion cost-cutting budget, $45 billion cost-cutting budget, thereby attempting to package an unprecedented power grab as the answer to fiscal woes. Governor Snyder suggests these cuts are part of a shared sacrifice as he tries to appeal to the renowned work ethic of Heartlanders. Of course, that shared sacrifice raises taxes on Michiganders while cutting services and changes the state's corporate tax structure. So only large C corporations pay business taxes while all other corporations get off scot-free. This amounts to a $1.8 billion tax break to businesses. And it goes on. Regarding the debt that we all are so goddamn worried about, you know, on not you, not me. It's bull hockey, and I know that, and you probably know it. As Perry Two writes, the debt, quote, is just numbers on paper and is of no consequence in itself. The threat from the debt is that the rich are using it as an excuse to sell off public assets for pennies, or really for nothing, since they stole the pennies from us to begin with. The feudal lords are emboldened, by the corporations they control. It doesn't matter who owns them on paper. And they are rapidly getting control of everything. What are you going to do, Truth Seeker? Where are you going to be on the 19th of this month? I hope you're going to be in Washington. Prairie 2 also writes, giant beanstalk futures are a strong buy. He writes, the Dow dropped almost 2% today, closing below 12,000. Traders were spooked by unexpected economic news from around the world. China posted a $7.5 billion trade deficit in February, which was their first in 6 years. Chinese officials blamed the Lunar New Year holiday for delaying shipments, but acknowledged that their trade surplus would be smaller this year. But this just may be China posturing ahead of the G20 currency meeting to be held in Beijing at the end of March, where the undervalued yuan will be the big issue. The U.S. trade deficit, on the other hand, is exploding, with oil imports now leading the surge. Wall Street is also jittery over the Eurozone debt, or specifically, the specter of European bonds falling through the floor. Moody's, the same people who rated some subprime loans as AAA investments, Moody's has downgraded Spain's debt. And unlike Greece or Ireland, Spain is a fairly large segment of Europe's economy. This is driving down the euro against the U.S. dollar. But the hedge funds had been betting record amounts against the U.S. dollar, and these two opposing views are translating into market instability. None of this nonsense should affect the real world, but unfortunately, Reagan set us on a course of trading the cow for magic beans. The state pension funds are in trouble because they invested heavily in Wall Street's magic beans. There is no reason states should be putting any money into Wall Street. They invest in Wall Street on one hand and borrow from Wall Street on the other hand to build public projects. Why do millionaires need to take a cut on both ends of this from the public coffers? Can you say kleptocracy? Speaking of the real economy, initial unemployment claims are up again and approaching 400,000 last week, indicating the job market is not recovering. At the very least, it indicates falling wages, if not the actual loss of jobs. The experts have been saying fuel prices have not risen enough to really hurt the economy. The experts were predicting jobless claims would fall. The experts are also recommending giant beanstalk futures. PrairieNumeral2.com. If you want to go to his website and find some magic beans. Did I mention this hour is sponsored by Dave Schaefer? I think I did. Thanks, Dave. What else we got? Oh, my God, there's just so much. Ryan in Illinois writes, for the last 30 years, there's been a war on the middle and working classes. It has been a sustained ground effort by the likes of Reagan, both Bushes, Phil Graham, Clinton, and many others. Since the middle classes were fairly strong from the policies of FDR and Eisenhower, the neo-feudal corporatists had their work cut out for them. Little by little, though, the war waged on. Tax burdens were shifted from the hoarders of wealth to the workers of the nation. Job security was abolished by NAFTA and outsourcing. Freedom to pursue new opportunities was curtailed by tying health care to employment with certain employers. But the last few months has been a blitzkrieg. The assault on public unions has been concentrated and fought on many fronts. Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio. Despite massive protests, last night Wisconsin's Republicans rammed through the bill to fatally wound public service unions. On the same night, Michigan passed a law to allow the governor to send an emergency financial manager to struggling towns to help their budget. The brown shirt would have the ability to dissolve legal contracts between union workers and the districts. Michigan doesn't need to rid the state of collective bargaining. They just won't recognize the results. As the ravenous overlords of our crumbling society see their goal within reach, they have stepped up the attacks to do away with American ideals of economic mobility and an educated populace. Our only hope, Mike, is that these blitzkriegs meet with strong internal resistance from the conquered, just like the ones from 60 years ago. Ryan in Illinois. A year ago before the 2010 midterm elections, and my suggestion was, and not because I have a crystal ball or impression or anything, but seeing the mysterious, always 2020 hindsight available writing on the wall, I suggested let these filthy Republicans have it. Just let them have it, and let's see what happens. Let's see how long the American public can tolerate it. here we are. And I just wonder, I just wonder, especially in the state of Michigan, what prompted the people in Michigan to elect a Republican governor? What prompted the people in Michigan to turn their legislative branch over to Republicans? What? What? But I could go back to 1979 and ask, what prompted working class Democrats in Michigan to vote for Ronald Reagan, the so-called Reagan Democrats? What? But here we are now. You know, we're here now. This is not 1980. This is 2011. Here we are. We're here. It's, I mean, no, you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, and you damn sure don't have to be a political or economic expert to see what's going on. All you have to be is conscious and willing to open your eyes. Do you see what's going on? Do you see what's going on? And so I will ask again. And it's just, you know, BS question. It doesn't mean a thing. It's just me feeding back into my own head. What's it going to take? How much longer? What's it going to take until those of us in this country, the tens of millions of us who are still sane, stop the machine? What's it going to take? What the hell is it going to take?
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Dave Schaefer. Thank you, Dave. And keep in mind, third hour, we're going to be talking about some background. Give you some background on what the hell possessed Peter King to hold these ridiculous-ass bigoted hearings today, and who Peter King's inspiration really is. Nebraska, this is from John Amato at Crooks and Liars. Under the headline, Nebraska anti-abortion law torches mother to watch her baby die. Have you heard about this? This is sick and twisted, but it's entirely predictable. Because extremist conservatives already in the government are now being emboldened by the arrival of the Fox News Tea Party Brigade in the halls of power. Now, listen. Nebraska's new abortion law forced Danielle Deaver to live through 10 excruciating days waiting to give birth to a baby that she and her doctors knew would die minutes later, fighting for breath that would not come. And that's what happened. The 1 pound, 10 ounce girl was born December 8th. Deaver and her husband Rob watched and held the baby as it gasped for air, hoping she was not suffering. She died 15 minutes later. The sponsor of the controversial Nebraska statute, Senator Mike Flood, Republican of Norfolk, told the Des Moines Register that the law worked as it was intended in the Deaver's case. Flood said in an interview with the Iowa newspaper, quote, "Even in these situations where the baby has a terminal condition or there's not much chance of surviving outside the womb, my point has been and remains that is still a life." End quote. John goes on, conservatives don't like the government intruding on their lives except when it intrudes on someone who doesn't share their religious beliefs. They are ghouls. Here's another one. Julie Schmidt Albin, who heads Nebraska's Right to Life, told the AP in a Sunday interview that the tragic outcome was better than an abortion. To give birth to a 1 pound child who cannot breathe and then allow that child to suffocate and die, Julie Schmidt Albin says, well, that's better than an abortion. She says, quote, "We acknowledge the tragedy that occurs with the poor prenatal diagnosis for the baby, but isn't it more humane for the baby to die in a loving manner than by the intentional painful death through abortion?" Deaver, the woman we're talking about here, Danielle Deaver, believes that such a decision should belong to her and to her husband. She told the Associated Press it was very frustrating and added to our grief because the waiting compounded everything. Witness the inhumanity of the right-wing anti-choice movement, and again we see the fanatics' absolute lack of empathy for the woman who is forced to bear a doomed child and watch it die in agony. So heartless, it boggles the mind. We should pause just a second and send some thoughts to Danielle Deaver and her husband, Rob, who were forced to carry to term an almost child that had no hope, no chance of living longer than the number of minutes it took to suffocate and die. Son of a bitch. So these are the people, these are the people, whether it's in government or intruding into the privacy of that should exist between a woman, a man, and a doctor, if there is a pregnancy involved, and perhaps the woman and the man's concept, if they're religious, their concept of God or justice or what have you. But these right-wing, filthy bastards who scream and belch and show their asses every time somebody wants to intrude into their right to own a 30-clip handgun have no problem intruding into the lives of a man and a woman and forcing them to give birth to a child who has minutes to suffocate. I hate you, sons of bitches. I hate you with a passion that scares me. Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. make it a 7 past the hour. So, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to get to this hearing today in front of Peter King's Committee on Homeland Security. I'll tell you, first of all, you know, wanting to see this because it is farcical to begin with. And I'll get to that in a second. I mean, if Peter King wants to hunt down terrorists, and he's going to indict, and that's what happens. You have a hearing like this, you're indicting an entire community. If he wants to do that, okay, I've got, what did he say the other day? He's going after, I'm paraphrasing, the Islamic community because that's where the terrorists are. You know, he ought to get in touch with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Talk to Mark Potok down there, and I'll tell you what, Peter, you half-witted ass wipe. how's come I can say that, but I can't say the whole word? Mark Potok will put you in touch with a lot of Christian terrorist organizations right here, homegrown. Matter of fact, not unlike the ones you've been associated with, Peter. We'll get to that in a second, too. But anyway, you heard of this, another female right-wing psychopath. Have you heard of her? All of a sudden, the Republicans and the nut right in this country, the absolute crazed right wing in this country, are producing all of these female sociopaths. Have you noticed it? Everybody from Bachman to Sharon Engel to Palin. Have you heard of Bridget Gabriel? She goes around. She's found her little niche. She makes an awful lot of money now. She is an anti-Muslim terrorist herself, but she's found a way to make a fortune here in the land of the terminally gullible. She's spoken in hundreds of churches, synagogues, conference rooms across the United States. New York Times had a piece about her a couple of days ago. Lori Goodstein wrote it. Bridget Gabriel says, quote, America, now listen, tell me if you've heard this before. You have to be over a certain age to have heard this. If you're under a certain age, you may have read about it. Here's what she said. America has been infiltrated on all levels by radicals who wish to harm America. They have infiltrated us at the CIA, at the FBI, at the Pentagon, at the State Department. They are being radicalized in radical mosques in our cities and communities within the United States. End quote. Now, where have you heard that before? If you're over the age of 55, you know damn good and well. Joe McCarthy. Wisconsin, here we go again, right? Wisconsin has produced some angels and some devils. McCarthy happened to have been a devil. But Joe McCarthy, with his Army McCarthy hearings back in the, yeah, I know, a million years ago, back in the 50s. But McCarthy made the charge that the State Department, the FBI, the Justice Department, our Foreign Service was riddled with communists. There were communists all over the place. He even accused Eisenhower of being a communist. Remember? So here comes this sociopathic nutbag, this Bridget Gabriel, which is not her real name. She uses a nom de guerre, if you will, in her travels around the country. I don't know what the hell her real name is and don't want to know. But here she is talking about radical Muslims have infiltrated everything! The FBI, the Pentagon, the State Department, the CIA! She's got books out. She makes media appearances and speeches. She has an organization, ACT! Exclamation point, for America! Ooh. She's become one of the most visible freaks on a circuit of self-appointed terrorism freaks who warn that Muslims pose an enormous danger within the U.S. borders. Oh, my God! Who'd have thought? But here we are again. These people, these right-wingers, damn it, do you understand what they're doing to your country, to my country? This is not Bridget Gabriel's country. If it were, she would treat it with respect. Oh, my God! On a new cable television show that Miss Gabriel co-hosts with some freak named Guy Rogers. Sounds like a cowboy. I'm Guy Rogers. He's the executive director of ACT. And he's also a Republican consultant who helped build, oh, here's a surprise, the Christian Coalition! These people are like, they're roaches, they're maggots. They eat at the same corpse over and over again. This rotting corpse of Christian insanity and capitalist radicalism. So the new target now, the new target, Muslims. So the executive director of her terrorist organization, ACT for America, is a guy, a Republican consultant who helped build the Christian Coalition. Guy Rogers. Ms. Gabriel, according to the New York Times, says her organization is nonpartisan, non-religious, national security group. Yes, and I'm the Pope! Yet, her organization draws on three rather religious and partisan streams in American politics. Evangelical Christian conservatives, who as a group are just curtain-chewing insane. Evangelical Christian conservatives. These are the people who are begging for death and fire and hell and destruction so they can drop their clothing and float naked into heaven, which, by the way, never is mentioned in the Bible at all. That comes out of the fevered brain of another one of these psychopaths. And they talk about Islam being radical, being violent. Please! Anyway, ACT for America gets its funding and its support from evangelical Christian conservatives, hardline defenders of Israel, both Jews and Christians, and Tea Party Republicans. Boy, you talk about a triumvirate of chaos and destruction. And I would question hardline defenders of Israel, both Jews and Christians. I'm sure there might be some Jews, but you know, my experience over the decades has been that most Jews, religious or not, stay the hell away from these people. They've been there. They've seen what this kind of poison can do. They were victims of it. Ms. Gabriel paints a portrait of Islam that is so thoroughly bent on destruction and domination, according to Lori Goodstein, writing at the New York Times. So bent on destruction and domination that it is unrecognizable to those who study or practice Islam. And this freak, this Bridget Gabriel, like so many of these right-wing freaks, every one of them, they're all about death and blood and gore and fear. And look out, look out, look out. Here they come. Here come the commies. Here come the liberals. Here come the fags. Here come the Jews. Here come the queers. Here come the this. Here come the that. Here come the Muslims. Here come the pick one, pick one. Here come the Protestants. Here come the boogermen. Here come the dogs. Here come the cats. They don't stop, do they? Bridget Gabriel represents or presents a portrait of Islam so perverted and sick that it is unrecognizable to people who study or practice the religion. But it is very receptive, this craziness, to Americans who are worried about the spread of terrorism. Oh, oh my God! Do you realize, fellow truth seeker, that for the past, ever since 9/11, 2001, do you realize what kind of a diet of insanity we have been fed in this country that has destroyed our ability to think? Do you realize how deep these right-wing bastards have penetrated?
To 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming.
It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. By the way, who is this hour brought to us by tonight, Kathy? We have it here someplace. I'll get to it in just a second. So anyway, what we're talking about here is this crazy woman, Bridget Gabriel, who has apparently convinced Peter King, a former IRA terrorist sympathizer, congressman from New York, to hold these ridiculous hearings that went on today. Anyway, people like Bridget Gabriel, according to those who work in counterterrorism, and this is all in a New York Times a couple days ago. Lori Goodstein is the writer. People who work in counterterrorism say that people like Bridget Gabriel are spreading distortion and fear and are doing the country a disservice. And isn't that just typical of right-wingers? That's all the bastards have done for the past decade. This has been a great opportunity, hasn't it? I am not trying to minimize the death of 3,000 people on American soil on September 11th, 2001. But that event occurred as a result of careful avoidance or careful planning, you decide, by the Bush crime family. They had all the information they needed to prevent that from happening and apparently chose not to. And since then, hasn't it just been an absolute goddamn joyride for the state security apparatus in this country? Haven't a lot of people gotten rich? Michael Chertoff making millions off of body scanning machines at airports is just one example. I mean, it just goes on and on. The military-industrial complex, fat as pregnant sows, with all the armaments and the war production that they've gotten into over the past decade to protect us from what? Probably people like Bridget Gabriel. So who she is? Here she is, parading around the country with her lies and distortions. Brian Fishman, a research fellow at both the New America Foundation in D.C. and the Combating Terrorism Center at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, said, quote, when you've got people who are looking for the worst in Islam and are promoting that as the entire religion of 1.6 billion people, then you only empower the real extremists. That's what Bridget Gabriel is doing. That's what Michelle Bachmann is doing. That's what Sarah Palin is doing. That's what the rest of these freaks. This crop of sociopathic women that has come up like mushrooms in cow dung after a bad rainstorm. Here they are. Sharon Engel, the one who claimed she wasn't a witch. I mean, on and on. What distinguishes Mrs. Gabriel from her counterparts is that she has built a national grassroots organization in the last 3 years that has already engaged in dozens of battles over the place of Islam in the United States. Act for America claims 155,000 members in 500 chapters across the country. To build her organization, Ms. Gabriel has enlisted Mr. Rogers, who had once worked behind the scenes for the Christian Coalition's leaders, Ralph Reed, and the TV evangelist and terrorist Pat Robertson. Mr. Rogers previously served as campaign manager for Pat Buchanan's presidential run in 1996 and as a consultant for John McCain in 2008. See how tight and small these circles of right-wing terrorists and perverts really is? I mean, it's astonishing. They just float like stuff in your toilet. They just float from this organization to that organization, from this destructive, screaming attitude about who's next. Well, Muslims this week. Oh, okay. Well, what comes after the Muslims? Well, Pat Buchanan hates the Jews. Okay, the Jews. And well, we got to get the gays. Okay, they're down the. Who do we have for the gays? Well, we've got somebody. Don't worry about it. What's next? Well, the liberals. Okay, and the union members. Don't forget them. Oh, and don't forget the school teachers. On and on and on. How much longer? Let me ask you something, truth seeker. How much longer? How much longer? What is it going to take before you and I and 30 million other people say no and resist? And I am not talking about standing on a street corner in downtown Atlanta holding a sign. I'm talking about resistance. How much longer? How much longer? I can remember people asking the same question in 70, in 71, 72. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking about another right-wing sociopath. This one's name is Bridget Gabriel, and it was her hard work in her bigotry and asinine attitude towards Muslims that has motivated Peter King to hold the hearings that he held today. Anyway, a little bit more on this freak. She, in her speeches, and she's written two books, Bridget Gabriel, she's making just tons of money by demonizing Muslims and Islam. She puts it very simply in the introduction to her first book, Because They Hate, a Survivor of Islamic Terror Warns America. That's the name of it. Here's what she says. In the Muslim world, extreme is mainstream. She said there is a cancer infecting the world and said, quote, the cancer is called Islamofascism. This ideology is coming out of one source, the Quran, end quote. Now, this is the organization that has caused what state was it? Was it Oklahoma that recently passed a law forbidding the institution within the state of Oklahoma of Sharia law, Islamic fundamentalist law? They would have no problem introducing Christian fundamentalist law. Why, of course not. You know, if your son offends you, kill him. If your daughter offends you, put her a barrier in the ground up to her head and stone her to death. You know, typical Christian, Judeo-Christian, action. But she said, we can't let Sharia law take hold. Oh my God. It's coming. Members of her organization are challenging high school textbooks and college courses that they deem too sympathetic to Islam. A group leader in Eugene, Oregon, of this group of sociopaths, signed up to teach a community college course on Islam, but it was canceled when a Muslim group exposed his blog postings denouncing Islam and denying the Holocaust. Not only, you see, it all comes back together, doesn't it? Huh? The Holocaust never occurred. The Jews are making it up. Islam is a religion of violence and death and blood. The Muslims are causing the problem. But the good old fundamentalist evangelical, I'm going to float naked up to heaven on the rapture day Christians. And by the way, if you get in my way, I will kill you. And if you don't believe what I believe, you are condemned forever to burn in hell. Those people, well, they are righteous. They're righteous. Ms. Gabriel has given hundreds of lectures, including at the Heritage Foundation. Oh, there's a surprise. And the Joint Forces Staff College in Norfolk, Virginia. Military, of course. Christian insanity, capitalist murder, and militarism. Taken together, you have an attempt to exterminate the Jews, exterminate the union members, exterminate the Muslims, exterminate the liberals. This is what these people are about. What's it going to take? What's it going to take, Truth Seeker? How much longer before the sane people still left in this country put a stop to this? How much longer? In Fort Worth, Miss Gabriel spent nearly an hour after her little speech signing books and posing for pictures with gushing fans. According to New York Times, Natalie Cresson, a composer clutching a signed copy of Ms. Gabriel's book, said, "She really opened up my eyes about Islam. I didn't realize it was so infiltrated in the schools everywhere." Yeah. Her salary from the two organizations she founded, American Congress for Truth and Act for America, her salary is about $200,000 in 2009, and the combined income of the group, which means this is what will probably wind up someday being unaccounted, is nearly $2 million. A lot of business in the hate profession, isn't there, huh? A lot of money there. Oh, God. Meanwhile, Peter King had his fun today, didn't he? Grabbed the national spotlight with a hearing on the radicalization of American Muslims. You know, it's madness. It's insanity. It's insanity. What would happen in this country if, oh God, pick an army, just for the hell of it, China. Let's supposing China invaded the Middle East and immediately went to the Christian holy places and bombed and killed and murdered. And a few Jews get wiped out. A few Muslims get wiped out. The target would be the Christians. Now, as we all know, the Chinese are atheists, agnostic. What are they? They're commies? What are they? Are they fascists? Don't know anymore about the Chinese. But what would happen? Every single Christian on earth, can you imagine what would come roiling and rumbling out of Rome, out of the Vatican, with the news that Chinese troops had invaded Christianity's holy places and was indiscriminately killing Christians? Can you get your mind around that? And the Chinese were sending out drone aircraft that were trying to track down Christian extremists. And when the drone aircraft released their hellfire missiles, aptly named, Christian little children in daycare centers were blown to pieces. What would happen? What would happen, Truth Seeker? What do you suppose would happen? And yet that's precisely what's happening. Only it's not China. It's the United States. It's not Christian children. It's Muslim children. It is not in Jerusalem or the Middle East or Israel. It is in Pakistan. It is in whatever country we decide to invade. And the target is Muslims. Does this register with you? Am I completely off base here? Peter King, holding the hearing on the radicalization of American Muslims. If American Muslims have been radicalized, Mr. King, how do you suppose that happened? What do you suppose? Since Mr. King won't answer me, let me point out something. Before he became this voice in Congress about the threat from Muslim terrorists, he was a mouth-breathing, blood-in-his-eyes supporter of a terrorist group, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army.
Oh, but Mike, you've got an Irish name. How are you going to talk about them?
Please. This is what he said at a pro-IRA rally on Long Island in 1982, quote, "We must pledge ourselves to support those brave men and women who this very moment are carrying forth the struggle against British imperialism in the streets of Belfast and Derry." 3 years later, he said, "If civilians are killed in an attack on a military installation, it is certainly regrettable, but I will not morally blame the IRA for it." End quote. Wait a minute. Mr. King, you sound like the typical Republican son of a bitch hypocrite. Another cockroach. What is it? Is it the IRA were Catholics like you? And the invader was the British military? Allegedly, the British military, not allegedly, the British military and Protestantism had the IRA and the Catholics in Northern Ireland up against the wall. Is that it, Peter? So therefore, the deaths of civilians in the struggle, collateral damage. But, Peter, what about the Muslims whose backs are up against the wall from U.S. imperialism? It's one thing to froth and foam at the mouth about British imperialism, Peter. What about American imperialism? Any comparison there at all? And of course, Peter King, as he rose with his glorious political career, benefited from strong Irish American support. And the IRA at the time was carrying out this campaign of bombing and sniping, targeting the British Army, Protestant paramilitaries, and sometimes pubs, and sometimes other civilian gathering spots. But you know, war is hell, right, Peter? What did he say? If civilians are killed in an attack on a military installation, it is certainly regrettable, but I will not morally blame the IRA for it, end quote. And here we are, 40 years later, Peter, and you are going to indict the entire Muslim population of the United States with your goddamn hearing. before the hour. I'm just totally flummoxed by all this stuff, not the least of which is Peter King's hearings today, former terrorist sympathizer himself, trying to indict an entire segment of the population. Hitler did this. Pol Pot did this. The leadership of China is doing it now. I mean, what? How do we get out of this? You know, I keep thinking, with all the pressure that's being applied from so many sources on the psyches of normal people in this country, among whom I include myself, believe it or not. I know I scream a lot. Yeah, I yell and scream. It's very hard to contain this stuff. But like the tax issue is one example. Just the tax issue. I'm sure you are aware of what brought about the French Revolution and the resultant, the terror, the slaughter that went on for, 2 years afterwards? The guillotine worked 24/7, lopping off heads. You know, the nobility in France decided they weren't going to pay taxes. That the tax burden should be shifted to the common people. No taxes from the nobility. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back for the French. Now, there were other reasons, but part of it was that. If not one of the main motivating realities for the French. What? The rich? The rich are excluding themselves from what we... Then we will kill the rich. And they did. And I think I look at the tax situation in this country. How the wealthy, the corporations, the mega rich continue and expand their ability to avoid paying for anything while the rest of us try to handle it. How much longer is it going to be, Truth Seeker, until we finally say enough? How much longer? What is it going to take? What is it? Is it going to take something like what happened in Madison? Is it going to take hearings by this crazed Peter King? What is it going to take? What? Before the millions of normal Americans in this country say, that's it, that's enough, we've had enough. Peter King, when confronted with the hypocrisy of his support of the IRA, said of these comparisons between the terrorism of the IRA and that of Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, Peter King said, quote, I understand why people who are misinformed might see a parallel. The fact is the IRA never attacked the United States. And my loyalty is to the United States, end quote. The fact is, he said, the IRA never attacked the United States. Well, neither did Iraq. Well, neither did Afghanistan. Well, neither did Vietnam. Well, neither did Panama. That's the insanity of Peter King. Well, the difference here, the IRA never attacked America. And he's the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. There are a few groups in this country who understand broad brushing of an entire community. Black folk understand it. Jews understand it. Gay folk understand it. And at one time, Catholics understood it. But apparently they've forgotten. To say that Islam is a bloody religion and Christianity is not. Have you ever read the book of Leviticus? In the book of Leviticus, according to the Judeo-Christian tradition, God gives detailed instructions for performing ritualistic sacrifices. And it repeats it so many times. Read Leviticus, that such bloody rituals must be important to this Judeo-Christian God, judging from the number of times that he repeats the instructions. The entire first 9 chapters of Leviticus, I challenge you to read it. It can be summarized as follows. Get an animal, kill it, sprinkle the blood around, cut the dead animal into pieces, burn it for a, quote, sweet savor unto the Lord, end quote. Moses tells Aaron that his sons were burned to death to sanctify and glorify God. Moses tells Aaron's cousins to drag the burned bodies out of the camp, and he warns Aaron not to mourn the death of his sons, or God will kill him too, along with everybody else. So tonight, before you go to bed, get out your Bible and read Leviticus chapters 1 through 9. That's all, just chapters 1 through 9. There will be a quiz tomorrow night. I will see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.